Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? How's it?
Good morning.
How are you, my G-Force?
All right, dude. How are you?
I'm lekker, man.
Good.
Spring is here.
Yeah, very much.
I was lucky enough to go away for a little. I went to Mauritius, but when I came back, I was like, oh, it's here.
Yes.
Like, we have sunshine.
Yeah.
Welcome to the video store.
Yes.
Thank you for wandering in to our lovely video store here. It's just myself and Graham behind the counter today. Graham G-Force Hackney is an editor.
Yep.
And very much the producer of this show. We're not working behind the counter. And my name is Russell. I'm the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And this is our clerk's chat.
Yes.
Where it's just us alone behind the counter. But if you're wandering in now and you're browsing the shelves, feel free to listen in on a good nerdy movie chat.
Yes.
You and I had two lovely movie dates last week.
Yes.
We went to watch The Roses.
Yeah.
Which is a very interesting 2025 sort of romantic comedy.
Kind of. Yeah.
Which we'll get into. That's the Benedict Cumberbatch, Olivia Colman film, which hit cinemas around the world this past weekend. And then you and I did something... I want to say completely different to that, but in a way they were kind of the same. No, we saw something else, which was Caught Stealing.
Yeah.
Which is the new Darren Aronofsky, starring Austin Butler and Zoe Kravitz and the whole star-studded cast, which also has come out around the world this past weekend. So we want to get into that. I've got a lovely, it's TV, but it's a film, but it's on TV that I want to chat about. The Thursday Murder Club, which is the big adaptation of the very famous novel.
Okay.
Which is a delightful romp.
Cool.
Murder mystery romp, which is over on Netflix. So yeah, lots to chat about.
Yeah.
All right. Should we kick things off with a little bit of Hey, Did You Guys See?
Yes, we should.
Do you want to start?
I can do that. Hey, did you see the trailer for Anemone? Yes.
I saw this coming.
Yeah.
And I think I did watch some form of trailer or teaser trailer at the time. This is Daniel Day-Lewis's son.
Yes.
Making his directorial debut.
I believe so.
And pulling in old pops to come out of retirement and act in his movie.
Yep.
So Daniel Day-Lewis is back acting in his son's film.
Yeah. Alongside Sean Bean.
Yes.
Yeah. And no idea what it's about.
Yeah, it looks arty as fuck.
Yeah, it's a bit surreal. It's a bit...
And it's called...
Anemone.
Anemone.
Yeah.
That's not going to do well. Well, the name's not going to do well. Famously, all movies with hard-to-pronounce names have struggled.
Okay.
I guess from a commercial point of view.
Yes, if people look at a word and go, I don't know what that is.
Very famously, like, people don't know that Shawshank Redemption... didn't do well in its cinema release.
Yes.
It did very well once it hit video stores
and
has since gone on to be considered one of the best films of all time. But interestingly enough, people credit its kind of mouthful of a name for it not doing very well.
Okay.
People being like embarrassed or intimidated to sort of ask for tickets for it.
Okay.
Which is such a strange thing to think about now.
Yes.
Dax Shepard, who's the actor who's got the very famous podcast, Armchair Expert, he also has a theory that one of the films he did, which was lined up to be a really big film, was problematic because of its name. It was called Zathura.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I think that happens. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
But, yeah, interesting, huh?
Yeah. Well, I remember the poster for Ratatouille had, like, a little... thing that told you how to pronounce it, like underneath the name, was like the phonetic pronunciation of it.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah,
that's smart. That's Disney getting ahead of it. But in the realm of interesting art house films on their way soon, hey, did you see the trailer for Begonia?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I'm very excited.
Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yes. There's no way that you can say his name without putting on a Greek accent.
No, it's impossible.
Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yes.
When I was in Greece on a family trip, I'll never forget this overwhelming sense of how proud the Greeks are of Greece in general, and how everything is very famous. This on the hill is very famous. Very famous. So Yorgos Lanthimos is very famous. And he has brought us The Favorite, The Lobster.
Yeah.
Poor Things. Poor Things was his kind of bigger set piece, bigger budget, Oscar darling that, that Emma Stone won Best Actress for.
Yeah.
He then followed it up with a arty as fuck film. Yes. That Kinds of Kindness, I tried hard.
Actually, but I haven't gotten around to it.
Whew, there's a reason why you haven't gotten around to it. Because it's like, it's a lot of hard work. And then now this is the next one. This one looks interesting. Yes. He seems to work with the same people.
Yeah.
So Emma Stone's in this one, as well as Jesse Plemons.
Yeah.
What I love about this film, and this is a very specific thing to have noticed.
Yes.
I'm getting increasingly more and more conscious of lighting.
Oh, okay.
And what shadows and darkness and contrast look on a film, because I know how it will project in my cinema.
Yeah.
So I'm very conscious of like, oh, fuck, this is going to be a toughie.
Okay.
You know, to project.
Yes.
Because darkness and shades and shadows and darkness are difficult. Mm. You've got to service your lamp, which I have, and I'm doing all these things. But it's something I'm very conscious of. Mm. Begonia looks bright.
Okay.
Super bright and super colorful.
Okay.
So I can't wait to project it.
Yes.
I think it will look fucking incredible on a big screen.
Okay.
So. But narrative-wise, we have Emma Stone as this kind of bigwig CEO powerhouse woman who gets kidnapped by Jesse Plemons and someone else who an actor I don't know, and it looks like she's held captive somewhere where they think she's an alien.
Yes.
That's all we get given. But that sounds like the premise of like a silly 90s comedy.
Yes, it does.
But it's made in 2025 by a very smart, very meticulous art house director.
Exactly.
So that could be very interesting.
It could be good. I hope it's good. It looks good. Hey, did you see the trailer for Hamnet?
Yes.
Okay, so this is the new Chloe Zhao movie.
Yeah. I think it's worth pointing out at this point, we're heading into Oscar season.
Exactly, yes.
So these are the films that are timed around a period when the Oscar nominations come out and the voting needs to happen.
Yeah, so it's like post-blockbuster season.
Yes, it's a nice way to look at it. So we've had the big blockbusters, the F1s, the Jurassic Parks, the Fantastic Fours, the Supermans. And now we're getting into the more critical darlings.
Yeah, exactly.
Begonia will screen at the Bioscope.
Sick.
It's lined up and hopefully that date holds.
Cool.
Hopefully the tickets will go on sale soon.
Okay, right.
Sometimes with these smaller films, the bigger distributors put the flag in the sand and then later decide they're going to take it away.
Okay.
But like Anemone was kind of dated.
Okay.
And so I was like, ooh, cool, new Daniel Day-Lewis. And then now it's kind of seemingly disappeared
off the
South African radar.
The kind of one that like after award nominations are out, then the local distributors pick it up.
Perhaps.
That happens somewhat often.
Yeah. But, we'll keep going. And the evolution of cinema is, I think, interesting because it is these bigger tent poles are going to be what drives the whole industry. It's what's going to keep the petrol in the tank of everyone that works in the distributors. But these smaller films are the other half.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's much in between.
Yes, not these days.
I think if they can successfully bring these films in a way that's not too expensive for them and it's anything but profit, even though small, they're not going to be wasting their time.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's seemingly the place we'll eventually get to.
Yeah.
But Hamnet is a period film.
Mm.
set in and around Shakespearean times.
Yeah, so Hamnet was Shakespeare's son, who died quite young.
Oh, in real life?
Yes, and became the inspiration for him writing Hamlet.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is kind of set around that.
Chloe Zhao is one of the few females to have won Best Director.
Yes, yep.
She won it for Nomadland. Mm-hmm. And what did she do after that? She did Eternals.
She did Eternals, yeah. I don't think she's done anything since then.
Yeah, she got handed a big big old fucking superhero movie, which probably took her to, like, breaking point.
Yeah.
But now in a more contained capacity is showing her her chops.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, did you see I was in the latest episode of Plot Armor?
Oh.
I think this is worth a mention.
Fun.
Plot Armor is a very fun podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a chap who you may have recognized, Caleb Janssens. He's often at the media premieres. He's often the sort of handsome guy that has the microphone that you got to talk to. It's lovely how in the last sort of 2 years, 3 years of doing this, we've gotten to know the characters. Like Colette, who's a lovely, dynamic, on-camera presenter. Caleb is one of the other ones. And he wrote me into this, which I was very excited about, which is a sort of like gamified version of what we do.
Okay.
In the sense that you have different rounds and you've got to pick things and you've got to debate. It's all film.
Mm.
Linked.
Yeah.
Like, what's the greatest A24 film of all time?
Okay.
And you got to make your argument for your one.
Right.
And then later in the show, it gets to lightning rounds. And it was cool. I went out, they shot it in Pretoria. I went out on a Sunday morning to shoot this.
Okay.
And I quickly learned the power of debating.
Right.
I never did it in high school. I don't know whether that was anything you ever had any experience
in. I didn't, but yeah, I knew of it, but avoided it.
But I immediately understood what debating and being like a politician means, or lawyer.
Yeah.
Because there was moments in the show where I'd picked a certain A24 film. This other guy had picked another one, which I love.
Yes.
I love all of them.
Yeah.
But I had to make a case for mine, so I had to sort of shit on his film. And you know, make clear, strong, emotional points as to why my film was better.
Yes.
You know, like, I chose Eighth Grade.
Okay. Interesting.
And my argument was just how timeless and important and just how incredible Eighth Grade was as a film. This is all about a young girl in the eighth grade.
Yeah.
And his one was, the guy next to me was Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Okay, yeah.
And I was like, it was so hard to shit on his film because I loved that one. But I was like, you know, people could be watching Eighth Grade forever where Everything Everywhere All at Once is a very specific, you know. Oh, so
yeah.
But spoiler alert, I win.
Oh, nice.
And all these rounds and you get points and then you enter into these little sort of battle you know, versions at the end. And there was just a point at the near the end where I was like, I'm glad I won.
Nice.
Like, that's cool. Like, I wanted to do this. I'm quite emotional when it comes to that. I don't think I'm very competitive.
Yes.
But I'm very emotional when it comes to sporting moments.
Yes. That's fun.
So, yeah, awesome. Plot Armor. Go give it a listen. We'll put a link in there.
Yeah. I'll find a link for it.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. Hey. I'll do this one. Hey, did you see the trailer for Good Boy?
Oh, I've seen the chatter on the internet around it.
So it's basically, it's a horror movie from the perspective of a dog.
Yes.
Yes.
And apparently the most Googled thing around it was, does the dog die?
Oh, right.
And apparently this might have changed their post-production plan.
Okay.
Because the internet was like, trying to make sure that the dog doesn't die.
Yes.
I haven't seen the trailer. Have you seen the trailer?
Yes.
What's it like?
It looks okay. It looks all right. It's just like it looks like the kind of horror movie we've seen 1,000 times, but the perspective might bring it something fresh.
Is the camera angle literally from the dog?
No. It's not like a POV dog point of view. It's like your dog is your protagonist, basically. So I don't know if there's going to be dialogue or what. but it's just the main character is a dog in a horror movie. So
I love good old dogs in movies, man. Yeah.
Yes.
I love it. I had such a funny chat once with someone about Air Bud.
Oh, right.
And now whenever I see any memes on the internet about Air Bud, I always send them on to her. But there's such a great, like, funny or die or college humor thing about the team that lost to Air Bud.
Oh, right.
And it's the scene is them in the change rooms going like, guys, I know you tried real hard, but I can't believe we lost to a dog. A dog. I mean, like, is that even allowed? Can a dog even play basketball? Like, what the fuck?
That's good.
Oh, that's so funny.
There's actually a website called Does the Dog Die? And it's all like tracking. It's tracking in movies. You can look up a movie that has stuff in it.
So it's not
see.
Just for Good Boy. It's for all the dogs.
It's for like all movies. It started as a thing just about dogs. Like you can look up if the dog in the movie dies. So, you know, because people will like not watch movies and TV shows and stuff like that. But since then it's like expanded into kind of like all like trigger circled stuff.
Interesting.
So you can look up if there's something like specifically that you don't want to see in a movie and see if it's in the movie that you want to see.
Interesting. Because people have said that like sometimes the trauma of the animal dying is far worse than humans. Because we're actually quite used to seeing humans being pummeled with bullets. But the moment you kill a dog, Jesus Christ.
It's odd.
It's odd. Okay. Any other ones?
I don't think so. Nothing that's pressing.
Cool. Something I see that's arrived at the video store, which we can stock on the shelves.
Oh, yeah.
Is the Superman documentary.
Oh, yes. The Chris Reeves documentary.
The Christopher Reeves documentary. I see it is now on Showmax.
Nice. I've been wanting to watch that.
Yeah. It was one of those that we saw being spoken about, especially in the build-up to James Gunn's Superman, which is, of course, a narrative film.
Yeah.
But this is the documentary of the dude who played Superman first, Christopher Reeve, who very famously became a quadriplegic.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, his whole body.
Yeah.
And I just, there's lovely parts to that, which is like his friendships and people like Robin Williams and how he helped and all those kinds of like interesting stories about him and so they are. Should we get into it? Should we start talking about our films?
Let's do it.
Okay, which one do you want to talk about first?
Let's see The Roses first because we saw it first. So
we saw it first. Yeah. All right. And what was funny about that is that we saw it quite early.
Yes, we did. Like
and we could have spoken about it on last week's episode, but we couldn't because of these embargoes.
Yeah.
And I find it fucking perplexing.
It is bizarre.
That you would think you have to put something out into the world as soon as you can.
Yeah.
To help build as much buzz. And you have to face the fact that there might be negative reviews. Mm. But ultimately, you want positive reviews.
Exactly.
And you would want them as soon as possible. So it was interesting that we weren't allowed to say anything until last week.
Yes.
Friday or Thursday.
Yeah, I think it was Thursday.
So that's why we can only talk about it now.
Yeah, very strange.
This is a film loosely adapted from The War of the Roses.
Yes.
Which I know nothing about.
No, neither do I.
Okay. All right, I was hoping we could maybe talk about that. But no, but that's a famous old book.
I don't know. I don't think so. The War of the Roses was a real thing, I think. That was like inspired Game of Thrones and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Let me look it up quickly. Let me look it up.
But this is Olivia Colman,
who
we know from many things. The Favourite was what she won her Oscar for, where she played the Queen. She played a queen.
Okay.
But I love her in interesting comedic roles. Mm-hmm. She was in Hot Fuzz, which is lovely.
Yes.
She was so good in that. And she sort of showed the fact that she can play more fun, silly characters.
Mm-hmm.
She was in The Lost Daughter, which was a bit of a weird art house film that Dakota Johnson directed. And then we've got old Benedict Cumberbatch, who we know from Sherlock and all sorts, Doctor Strange. Firstly, what did you think of their pairing as a couple? Because the whole film centers around their relationship, their marriage, and whether or not it is going to fall apart.
Yes. I like them a lot.
I thought the writing and their rapport was really good.
Yes, yeah. They're both like obviously very charming, very charismatic people. Mm. And then they give them this like very, because you know, they're English, but even though the movie's set in America, they're both British. So they give them that like British witticism of like the very snappy kind of dialogue.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I did like it. Mm-hmm. I originally thought it was, in my head, they were of different ages.
Oh,
and I'm not entirely sure which way I sort of saw them going. Who was older, who was younger.
Yes.
But they felt like an odd pairing until I watched the film, and then I was like, no, it pairs well.
Yes.
Because kind of in my head, I see him as being younger than her.
I wonder if it's just because he's had a shorter, his career, I think, started a bit later than hers.
Perhaps.
I don't know how different they are in ages, but I feel like she's been around in things a lot longer than he has.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just the sense.
But yeah, I liked it. It was fun.
Yeah.
And it was, I think the thing to talk about is what kind of a comedy gets made in 2025.
Yes.
That's like the overarching thing that we keep chatting about. It really came to the fold in Naked Gun. Us talking about Naked Gun.
Yeah.
The internet took to that and said, you know, this is important. We don't make comedies like this anymore, and we don't make comedies in general. So it was really interesting to go in and go, well, how do you make a romantic comedy in 2025?
Yes.
So for the most part, it was quite witty and quippy,
and
character-driven, and as you said, quite British.
Yes.
Which is very much in its kind of smart dialogue and its smart situation. So we get shown the lifespan of their marriage, but we really catch them a little bit later in life once they have grown kids that go off.
Yes.
And he is a successful architect who, due to a bunch of things, and we won't get into it necessarily, his career path changes.
Yeah.
She was always suggested to have been very talented in the kitchen, but then the dynamics in their relationship change, where she becomes a successful chef.
Yes.
And so all of a sudden, what it means to be the man or the provider gets sort of put upside down, and that gets kind of called into question. And then ultimately their relationship just gets more and more fraught.
Yeah.
Till eventually you get shown in the trailer sort of a very like physical humor.
Yes.
As it sort of turns into sort of that kind of typical American sort of comedy, situational comedy. I thought it was really interesting. There's a character played by Kate McKinnon.
Yeah.
Who represents this kind of fun side character that has got this kind of bit that keeps coming up.
Yes.
And she sort of is just playing this kind of one character. She doesn't sort of necessarily have too much sort of to her.
Mm.
But in a way, I thought she kind of represented the old comedy.
Yes.
The old guard
right.
of what those kinds of films used to be.
Okay.
And it felt at odds against our two main characters,
right.
who are very much living in 2025.
Okay.
Where it was like, you know where this would have gone 20 years ago in
exactly.
like an old school or Step Brothers. Mm. You know, those kind of like Will Ferrell, American Pie comedies.
Yes.
They would just dial up the scenario to make it as awkward and as crazy and as preposterous as possible.
Exactly.
Where
here,
like, that happens, but it gets resolved. That's
yes.
not as big a deal.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think I get what you're saying, yes.
It's not as much of a crisis, a situational, physical crisis.
Okay.
It's more it's more in their writing and in their characters, and it sort of plays out more maturely now in 2025, where it really would have ended naked, on the roof, on fire, you know, like too much.
Yes.
So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
What did you make of the film?
I enjoyed it. I like the fact that these two characters, it's very easy to like put these either of these characters kind of in the position of like the quote unquote villain. Like it would be really easy to make him like the neglectful kind of horrible husband. It would be really easy to make her like the, you know, your stereotypical shrew of a wife.
Yeah.
But instead they're both clearly very intelligent, very like gifted in what they do. You know, they're both he's a very talented architect, he's a very talented chef. And to like take these people who are essentially equals and say, actually, they're both kind of horrible.
Yes.
You know, neither of them is good, neither of them is bad.
And in a way, the film kind of gives you that little tidbit in the beginning.
Yes.
The way it starts, and it starts with them in this marital sort of counseling session.
Yes.
And you realize, like, you're just made for each other, actually.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. No, that is a lovely play on who's right, who's wrong.
Exactly. And of course,
when they dial up the tennis match of doing evil shit for each other, that just escalates it. But you sort of don't know who deserved it first.
And they're both willing to escalate it. That's the thing. It's not like one of them is really like hammering the other. They both keep one-upping each other.
Yeah. So it is smartly written and balanced in that sense.
Yeah. There is a vein of like the mean-spirited comedy, which I really like. You know, not mean-spirited in the like the kind of movies that like the Daily Wire and that sort of thing are making. I mean, more like Douglas Adams sort of writing, where your characters are kind of assholes or like lovable assholes, but
Douglas
they're still
Adams.
Yeah. I like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Yeah, like his characters are all like pricks. They're horrible people, but they're lovable assholes.
Okay.
So you like them despite themselves, not because of themselves.
Okay.
And these characters are kind of the same.
What, do you have any lovable assholes, famous lovable assholes that you can think of?
I mean, like almost every character that Douglas Adams writes. Yeah. Zaphod is a lovable prick.
Zaphod.
Yeah, he's one of the characters in Hitchhiker's Guide.
I read Hitchhikers. I read the first one.
In the movie, he's the character played by Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
The movie kind of like sands a lot of their rough edges off. They make them a lot cuddlier in the movie. They kind of get rid of the mean streak.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie kind of has that to an extent, but not in the extent where it's like there's no, the victims are the characters. The victims aren't the audience. You know, when a mean-spirited comedy is making fun of like a real world group of people, you know, like I said, like the Daily Wire make movies where they like make fun of trans people and that sort of thing. Like the or there's like a specific people in
what
the audience.
What do you mean, the Daily Wire?
The Daily Wire is like they're actually like a quote unquote news, like right wing news, like place. They're like political pundits, but they also make movies.
Do they?
Yeah. So they've made a movie. Like they made a movie called Lady Ballers, which is about a bunch of guys who pretend to be transgender to play basketball against women.
Like a comedy. Like
quote unquote comedy.
Oh, sure.
But it's all, you know.
It's meant to. It's designed to actually undermine.
Exactly. Yes.
Trans.
Exactly.
People.
That's also like a mean-spirited comedy, but the mean-spiritedness is aimed at real people, which is sucks.
Yeah.
But in a movie like The War of the Roses, the meanness is aimed at the characters, and they're kind of directed at each other, which is fun.
Did you find out anything about War of the Roses?
Oh yes. Yeah. So The War of the Roses was a real thing that happened. It was like a British Civil War that happened in like the 1400s. It is also a novel from the 80s. And there's also another film adaptation from the 80s called The War of the Roses.
Okay, I would imagine this is based on the novel.
Yeah. Novel by Warren Alder.
Okay.
In 1981. And then there's another movie adaptation from 89 with Michael Douglas and Danny DeVito and Kathleen Turner.
Okay.
Never heard of this movie.
Yeah.
But it's got a good cast.
Yeah, doesn't it just?
Directed by Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
But yeah, so obviously this is like a take on the same thing, but with a British cast as opposed to an American cast.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
The other great film that we watched recently was Caught Stealing.
Yes.
Which, as you know, if you've been listening in every week, the folks at Sony wanted us to let you know about.
Mm.
So it was very cool to track its arrival.
Yeah.
This is Darren Aronofsky, who is a filmmaker that certainly knows what the fuck he's doing.
Yes.
Burst onto the scene with Requiem for a Dream, which was famously a very dark movie. This is all about drug addiction with Jared Leto and Jennifer Connelly. Left people all very haunted and sad.
Mm-hmm.
Someone once told me that on a first date
at
a guy's house, he was like, let's watch a movie, and he put on Requiem for a Dream.
Whoa.
And she was like, this is not going to work. And she had dressed up thinking they were going to leave the house. And he was like, I just want to stay in. So she was in her like go out dancing clothes, sitting on a couch watching Requiem for a Dream. And I was like, fuck this dude.
Oh, that's wild.
Is not going to get anywhere. and then made like Noah.
Yeah.
The Whale recently with Brendan Fraser, which was very small, very beautiful adaptation of a play.
Yeah.
What are the other big ones?
The Wrestler.
The Wrestler, yeah.
Wrestler, Black Swan.
Black Swan was, yeah. Black Swan was, I think, one of his bigger commercial films that I think caught a lot of people's attention.
Yeah, yeah.
But certainly knows what he's doing. And now this is based on a book, and it looks like from the credits, the author of that book was very much involved in the making of this movie.
Yes, he also wrote the screenplay.
Yeah. So we are now in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah, I think it said 98, I think.
In New York, which pre 9/11, New York was a somewhat grubby place.
Yes,
I think it was better than it was in the 70s.
Yeah,
so still cleaned up and somewhat gentrified, or the gentrification was starting.
Yes,
but a lot of people praise or shit on Giuliani.
Yeah.
For what he did as a mayor, he was very famously the mayor during 9/11.
Yeah.
Which was 2001.
Yep.
But he's the guy that kind of cleaned up New York
in
sort of more modern times. So this is sort of pre the cleanup.
Yes.
This is almost sort of, I wouldn't say celebrating, but very much living in this kind of grubby New York world. We have our main character, Austin Butler, who we understand and know was a baseball player.
Mm.
And was perhaps lined up to be a very successful baseball player who, after an accident, now can't play baseball.
Yes.
And is a barman and gets caught up in a nasty sort of set of circumstances involving money, drugs, something.
Mm-hmm.
And finds himself in this escalating world of chaos over the course of like a day or 2 days.
Yes.
We looked at it from afar and were like, this looks quite fun.
Yes.
This could be lots of fun. We went into it and experienced what I think wasn't that fun.
No, it's not. You used the word that I used to describe it, which is grubby.
Yes. We came out of it and I first went to the word messy, and then I was like, no, that's the wrong word.
Yeah.
Because people will think it's messy filmmaking.
Yes.
If you say this is a messy film,
then
that often means that the filmmaker didn't quite know what to do. It was unbalanced and all over the show. He knows exactly what he's doing. It's a great, confident, very slick piece of filmmaking. Yeah. But the film itself is dirty.
Yeah. Austin Butler is a grub in a grubby city. And grubby people are trying to kill him.
Yeah, and without giving too much away, it's like a wound that's not being looked after for 2 hours.
Yeah.
That could open and close, or that needs to have a hand on it and is probably not sterilized anymore.
Exactly.
Like, that's the movie. And so I did find it frustrating. I personally tend to not like the films where things just get worse and worse and worse.
Oh, right.
That's personal.
Yes.
But I had to sort of surrender to that after a while. I had to surrender to the fact that, like, his life is completely changed.
Yes.
He's on a new course, even though that all was very quick.
Yeah.
And I'm not OCD, but a part of me was like, his affairs need to be kept in order, but they just, everything just goes to shit.
Yeah.
And I had to sort of just go, okay, just go with it.
Yeah.
But it was one of those films where, like, the day after, the night of, the next day, like, I've thought about.
Mm.
It hasn't quite left me, which is the, for me, and what we've said on the video store, is one of the main signs of its success. Like, did you come out of it different?
Yeah.
And we walked out of it, and our friend Leon,
who's
a very famous film critic, who we see at these media screenings, we all agreed we sort of needed to shower after watching it, which is cool because it was Leon who said that.
Yes.
It was at a varsity lecture that he gave where he said, for him, the sign of a good film is, do you come out different?
Mm.
Are you happier? Are you more inspired? Are you more frustrated? Are you more horny? If you leave different, it's done its job.
Okay.
There's nothing worse than forgetting what movie you watched that morning or that night.
Yeah.
Which has often been my mark.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we've come out of these movies where I've sort of forgot that we watched it. And I was like, that's horrible. That's such a shit way of, you know, unfortunately a way of seeing it. But it's the truth, where we just get given so much.
Mm.
We get shown so much. How do you penetrate? How do you
exactly.
How do you be different? A lot of the criticism, the reviews of this have said, you know, they don't make movies like this anymore, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah,
I love the fact that we are playing with the 90s.
Yes.
Now?
Yeah.
We sort of left them alone for a long time.
Yeah.
And now we're like playing with the 90s.
We're like past 80s nostalgia and we're moving into 90s nostalgia.
Totally. And for someone who was very present in the 90s,
yeah.
I was 1999 was when I started high school.
Okay.
I was in high school by 1999. Mm. Yeah, that's right. In the millennium, I'd already done a year of high school.
Okay.
I think. Fuck's sakes.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think my first year of high school was 2000, and you would be a year before me.
Yeah. Because I remember making out with a girl on Millennium and being like, I'm in high school and you're not. She was like in primary school.
Right.
And we made out in the garden. and so, yeah, and on one of those holidays, I remember on one of my like high school holidays, I visited my friend who lived in Cape Town, and we were watching Woodstock 99 live as it was happening, which was also like, that is such an important moment. Mm. Like, people must all go watch Trainwreck, the original one about the docuseries about Woodstock 99.
Yes.
They've now made tons of Trainwrecks
about
many different topics, but the first and the original one was about the madness of Woodstock 99. That's totally worth everyone's time.
Okay.
That's on Netflix.
Oh, cool.
But you then start realizing how wild the 90s were.
Yes.
And at the end of the 90s was when Woodstock happened.
Yeah.
And there was just this incredible amount of aggression.
Oh, right.
And that's probably the most interesting part of the 90s is like, how did you build to that?
Okay.
And it was a combination of so many things. The second Iraq war, did that happen? Wait, the second Gulf War happened post 9/11, but there was a first one.
Yeah, that was late 90s, I think.
That was late 90s.
No, sorry, early 90s.
So early 90s, like yeah.
92, something like that?
Yeah, that sort of started the kettle boiling. And it was the fact that sort of no major conflict had happened in a while. There was, you look at a movie like American Pie being so successful, where a lot of it is premised around quite predatory, quite bad shit.
Yes.
You know, they're like spying on this girl while she gets changed.
Yeah.
Like that's like the big premise of the movie.
Yes.
But I think the most fascinating thing is the fact that there will always be bands like Limp Bizkit and Korn. They'll always exist. There'll always be a punk scene. There'll always be a band that talks about breaking shit.
Yes.
But the question we all have to ask ourselves is, why were those bands as famous and as big as they were?
Right.
So that in front of hundreds of thousands of people in Woodstock 99, you have a band like Limp Bizkit singing the song Break Stuff.
Yes.
And then they all proceed to break stuff.
Yes.
Like, why does that happen? And so that's interesting. And so this film, why I'm bringing all this up is because this film is in that boiling pot.
Yes.
Where it's super violent.
Yeah.
It's pre-cell phones.
Yeah.
It's pre-smartphones.
Yeah.
So that's quite cool that our main characters have to sort of use payphones. And things can't kind of move as quickly or as fast. They just spiral.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's an interesting film.
Yeah.
Caught Stealing.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see its life.
Mm.
I immediately came out of it and was like, oh, this is maybe not going to sort of start a fire of like people coming to watch it.
Yeah, it's not super mainstream.
It's not mainstream. And it, a little bit like Anora, it sort of leaves you not necessarily going, fuck, this is awesome. I'm going to tell everyone about it. You sort of, as you said, you leave wanting to shower.
Yeah.
But it does stick with you.
Yes.
And I'm really glad it exists.
Mm. I was also going to say, like, shades of Anora, of like running around a city, trying to find specific people, that kind of, that vibe, that misadventure kind of vibe is there.
Yeah, and it's just sort of all just getting completely out of hand.
Yeah, exactly, that wild escalation. See, I do like movies where things like wildly escalate the way they do in here,
okay.
and where someone's life just completely unravels. Yeah. I think it's almost always interesting to like see how that character, that kind of character, is written, and just watching people, like a character, respond to these things that's happening and how they deal with it.
Yeah.
You know,
totally. Sure. All right. Should we move on?
Sure.
Anything else to mention? Sorry, I spoke quite a lot about court stealing. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention?
I mean, I just want to say that I liked it. I thought it was really solid.
Yeah, your review on Letterboxd was lovely.
You were right.
A real grub of a film.
Yes.
I liked it.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's probably the best way to sum it up.
Yeah. It's just these odd-bod characters coming in and out. And like these, again, it's an example of like the two like Jewish guys that he meets. They're like really likable, but horrible.
Yeah.
They're awful people.
Yeah.
But they're really likable for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Like, why is that? Vincent D'Onofrio and Liev Schreiber.
Yeah.
They were really good.
Totally.
Yeah, go watch it. It's a good movie.
Over into TV.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to tell you about the Thursday Murder Club.
Okay.
Which is I think it was a very eagerly awaited film.
Okay.
So the author, Richard Osmond,
right,
has now gone on to write an incredible series around this, but it started with the Thursday Murder Club, which is a book, a very successful book, which has now been adapted into a film.
Yes.
For Netflix. It is directed by Chris Columbus.
Okay.
Which is amazing.
Harry Potter's own.
Harry Potter's own, yeah. But also, you got to remember, this is the guy who brought us Home Alone.
Yeah, Home Alone.
This is the guy who wrote Gremlins.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
So this is Mrs. Doubtfire?
Okay, yeah.
So this is a dude who knows what's going on. Richard Osman, the author,
yeah,
is also the host of a very successful entertainment podcast called That's Entertainment.
Yeah. You'll see him on a bunch of like British panel shows,
yeah,
that sort of thing. Yeah.
The book is just one of those so successful books,
yeah,
and him as an author and his whole series of books are so successful that he's become a famous author.
Yeah.
And now you realize there's just not a lot of famous authors in the world.
Yes.
Despite like, you know, millions of books being written all the time.
Yeah.
But no, this is big budget stuff. And yeah. And his latest episode of That's Entertainment is a lovely interview with Chris Columbus.
Oh, cool.
And so you get quite a lot about how this all came about and Chris Columbus's approach through that interview. And, okay. and one of the things he said was there was a bit of a bidding war amongst the streamers for who was going to get the rights to the Thursday Murder Club.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. It's one of those. It's like it's inevitable that it's going to become a movie because it's a lovely crime whodunit set in a very fancy retirement home. So you can see it. You can see the poster already. and Columbus said that Netflix ultimately gave the biggest budget.
Okay.
And that budget was enabling them to afford Helen Mirren.
Right.
Pierce Brosnan, Ben Kingsley.
Yes.
So it's like it's a stacked cast.
Okay.
The young police constable is Naomi Aki.
Oh, okay, cool.
From Blink Twice.
Yes.
The woman with the lovely gap in her teeth.
Mm.
She's great. So, and this is the start of a franchise thing.
It's a series of books.
Because he's written a lot. Basically... Okay. And I just love it. It's not about the starting of the Thursday Murder Club. The Thursday Murder Club exists the moment the book and the sort of story starts.
Okay.
And basically in this retirement home on a Thursday in the jigsaw room,
right,
instead of making jigsaw puzzles, they solve cold cases.
Okay.
And they've already got this group together, which is cool. You quickly get the sense that Helen Mirren's character had a previous life in the sort of MI6.
Okay.
So she's a very capable, smart, detective-y type person.
Mm.
And Ben Kingsley was a more psychologist,
okay,
sort of person. Pierce Brosnan was involved in sort of more labor protesting. Everyone's got this kind of interesting sort of past, but they all come together. And then, of course, the movie sort of really, or the story really kicks off when there's a mystery and a murder in the retirement home.
Okay.
But it's lots of fun.
Cool.
It's a real, like, it's interesting that it did get a brief cinema window, because that happens for a bunch of reasons. It's a way to make a bit of money back of your production budget.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also needed in some ways to qualify for awards.
Yeah, it is. You have to have a certain window in cinemas. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's ultimately, and I think everybody knows this, it's a streaming film.
Yeah, okay, cool.
It's the video store film.
Right.
You know,
yes.
A little bit like we said with Shawshank Redemption. There are these movies that just need to exist in a longer, less shoved down your face kind of, you've got to go out and get it and see it. But it's a lovely film.
Cool. It sounds fun.
Yeah.
It sounds charming.
It's a great whodunit.
Nice.
It's got the nice sort of plinky plonky moments.
Yes. Shades of Agatha Christie. Cool.
It's delightful, and there's cake, and there's a constable, and there's a. It's very British.
I was about to say it sounds very British.
A cake and a constable.
Nice.
I wanted to go out into spoiler alley.
Okay.
Because I wanted to tell you about Relay.
Oh yes.
You brought this up
a while ago.
Yes, and I feel like now we can talk about it.
Okay, cool.
The film's been out.
Yes.
And it came with very little splash, which I suspected it would.
Yes.
Because of the reasons I want to tell you.
Mm.
Okay, so should we wrap up now and then go out and have a chuff in the alley?
Let's do that.
Okay. All right. Thanks, folks. There's a movie called Relay, which is going to be out and about. And the spoiler alley is where we go once we've locked up the shop.
Mm.
We go out into the back and we talk spoilers.
Yes.
So... at this point, if you don't want to hear about the spoilers of the movie Relay, you can end now.
Okay.
Our home base is thevideostore.co.za. Mm. You are welcome to feedback in the comment section below, whether you're on Instagram or Facebook, to let us know what you think about what we've spoken about. You can always return something. And we've got the details in the description below.
Mm-hmm.
But also on places like the Facebook group, please give us some Hey Did You Guys Sees.
We
appreciate the folks that do that. And we'll see you again soon. Eh?
Yeah.
Okay, lekker.
Nice.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Yes.
So.
Tell me about Relay.
I'm going to start with the good.
Okay.
Okay. So the premise which you get from the trailer and what I could tell you is that we've got a guy who does something. And what it is that he does, and he does really well in this kind of covert way, is he helps people who want to blackmail corporations and people.
Okay.
So if someone's a whistleblower, they would get in touch with this guy, and he will help barter the deal to either get the money or get them safe or get their jobs secured.
Yes.
And so this whole movie takes place in the world of like corporate espionage, which in a way is interesting because the whole fucking nuclear fucking Mission Impossible world.
Right.
Such bullshit. I mean, like... With lots of love to all the embassies and all the diplomats that I've dealt with here at the Bioscope, I can tell you that like most embassies and diplomatic missions and politics is a grubby mess with very little budget and, you know, not a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
So like the real scary shit in the world is corporate.
Right.
Because... when incredible amounts of money are on the line, be it drugs or pharmaceuticals or certain things, they will fucking do whatever they need to do to get that shit done. So that's how people die and assassins and all that. And they got the budget to pay for it.
Yes.
So we get privy to the story of Lily James.
Okay.
Who is a person... who has discovered that her big pharmaceutical company didn't look at proper results, didn't test properly, right. and have gone to market on something that could potentially be very harmful.
Right.
It'll make lots of money, but be very harmful. So she then is introduced to Riz Ahmed's
yep.
character. And the word relay comes in because what this guy does is he uses a very interesting way of communicating, which is if you are a mute person
yeah.
in the world, you can use this machine and you can use a service that still exists by sort of human rights and sort of general disability funding
right.
called the relay system. And it's in the tri-state area where you it's almost like a beeper, but it goes to a central place and they will read the message and phone someone for you.
Okay.
And decode the message back to you. So does that make sense?
I think so.
He's got this little machine that almost looks like a big calculator.
Right.
Where he can write a message and this would go to this relay service.
Mm-hmm.
They would phone someone like you and say, "Hi, I've got a call from Russell."
Right.
He says, "What time should we meet?"
Okay.
And then you've got to give a message back,
mm-hmm.
and I will message back this person. So it's like a call center to help people who can't speak.
Okay.
And he uses this system to communicate to the corporates because nice. They don't hold any records by human rights and Poppy Act kind of type of law.
Right.
They can't divulge legally who the person is. So despite you with warrants, you can't get to the person who's communicating to you
right.
through this service.
Okay.
And he uses this as a way to communicate to the people to say, "Hi, I've got this information. My client wants to buy security that you're not going to harm her. I will give you back a copy. I will keep a copy of this documentation safe." So the whole movie is about him looking after Lily James.
Okay.
This is his character.
Yeah.
And we get privy to a lot of the trauma she faces as she is being harassed and stalked and threatened by this company.
Okay.
She's trying to get hold of her.
Yes.
And of course, it's the classic kind of like assassin movie where, you know, they've got this routine. Riz Ahmed's character's got this routine. He's got these kind of rules that he lives by. But of course, this case is now going to be different.
Yes.
For whatever reason, he's going to break some of his rules. And, you know, now he sort of presents himself because he has to, because he kind of falls in love with her.
Right.
Sounds interesting, right?
Yeah. Sounds all right.
And the way that they communicate is interesting.
Right.
Like someone obviously like, it's a good idea. It's premised on the seed of this good idea.
Okay.
Here's the spoiler.
Okay.
Turns out she's in on it.
Right.
And the whole thing was set up to get him.
Right.
Because they needed the original of another case.
Right.
Okay. It's frustrating and annoying as fuck because you invest so much into her.
Okay.
That when she then turns around and is evil
yes.
or part of it, you're like, "Well, what the fuck, man?" And it also feels like very bad filmmaking because in your head,
yeah.
you've seen her sort of acting scared by herself. So it does not make sense.
Okay.
So it's like you've been so fucked with.
Yes.
That as a twist, it's not nice.
It's like the film contradicts itself in that way.
Totally.
If it's the kind of thing where, like, if you went back and watched it again and you could, like, pick up all these things that made you go, "Oh, okay, they've actually been, like, hinting at it the whole time, but
yeah,
I didn't notice."
Yeah, it's like when you look back on Sixth Sense.
Yes.
And the few scenes that you saw, you realize, like, how it could work yes. that he was a ghost.
Exactly. Like, there's a scene where he's having dinner with his wife and she never says anything.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah, so they're like, the little that you get was deceiving you, but in a cool, interesting
exactly.
way. This you got, and it was deceiving you, and it just becomes fucking annoying because you actually emotionally get involved,
yes.
and you actually want them to succeed together, and be together.
Yes.
You want that. They were successful in making you want that.
Yes.
And so when you can't get given that, mm-hmm. you actually turn to the film and go, fuck you.
Yes. If a film's going to like pull the rug out from under you like that, and you has to be in like a positive way.
And yeah, and you fall on your ass going, oh, well, fuck, man. Yeah. I actually feel like I've wasted an hour of my life.
Yes.
Because I became emotionally invested in something I can't get.
Mm.
So that to me is like, it's such a big twist.
Yes.
That just completely fucks the movie.
Yeah. Like I remember watching a couple of years ago, I rewatched like the Ocean's movies, and I think it's Ocean's 13 that does this thing at the end where they just like pull the rug out from under you, but it's cool. And it's like something that makes you go, oh, like that's actually rad.
Mm.
You know, I can't remember the exact details. I think it's like revealed that the heist has actually happened like weeks earlier.
Yes.
Something
yes.
like that.
I mean, that's a magic show.
Yes, exactly.
And that works.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. It should be like a magic show.
Where you go, ah.
Yes, like there's like a misdirect where you miss something.
Yeah, and the movie's version of opening up a hand and it's not there. And then they open up the other hand yes. and it's there. And you're like, wow, how exactly. did you get it in the other hand?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's no, what it should be.
Exactly. So yeah, so
that sucks.
That's, you know, and it almost feels like it's the film school sort of like, whoa, yeah. idea, like at 2 a.m.
Yes.
Oh, and she can be like in on it. But you're like, you forget that you are taking someone on this journey.
Yeah.
And if you fuck with them, they're not going to like you.
Exactly. Exactly. They'll piss your audience off.
Exactly. So no, and I can speak about it now because the movie, I think, has since now been released.
Okay.
And yeah. So yeah, if you've stayed this far and joined us in the alley, you are now warned.
Yes.
You could most likely save some hours yeah. of your life.
It's like I remember the Colin Farrell movie, The Rookie. I don't know if you ever saw it. It got turned into a TV show. There's like a Rookie TV show on Netflix with Noah Centineo or whatever. But at the end of the movie, he's like, for like the CIA or something.
I've been watching the Nathan Fillion, The Rookie.
Oh, no, you're right. It's not The Rookie. It's the Recruit, not The Rookie. The Rookie's the Fillion one. You're right.
Oh.
I think it's Al Pacino and Colin Farrell. Where he's like a trainee CIA dude. And then the end of the movie, it's like revealed that like the whole thing was like a training exercise and none of it was real.
Oh, fuck.
And when I watched it as a teenager, it's like, whoa, cool. Didn't see that coming. But like in hindsight, it's like, okay, that's actually kind of like, it completely like destroys the stakes.
Yeah.
Like nothing that happened matters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which sucks.
Yeah. The Game, I remember also being like, you're not sure what was real and what wasn't.
I didn't like that. A lot of people like that movie. It's a Fincher film.
Yeah. I wanted to go back on it and I haven't had the chance to go back.
The thing that bugged me about it was at the end of it, like Michael Douglas has been through this like traumatic experience.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh, wow. Like what a thing I've been through. Yeah. I'm like, he should be furious.
Yeah.
He should be like punching everyone in the room.
The end reveal was that it was all a game.
Yeah, it's literally like, because there's a reveal that it's a game, and then the reveal, then there's a second reveal that's like, oh no, actually this is real.
Yeah.
And then there's another reveal like, oh no, it's not actually real.
Yeah,
it is
right.
still the game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what frustrated me about it was the character's response to it. Yeah. Cole and I were talking about, we watched it before doing one of our after movies.
Yeah.
Somebody recommended it to us as a reference.
No, it's a thing to perhaps watch. Usual Suspects has also got the sort of famous twist. What's interesting about that is that what you were given throughout the movie, you're actually not sure
yes.
whether that was real or his story
exactly.
about it. So that kind of makes sense. It's a very
unreliable
complex
narrator.
Movie, but it's the unreliable narrator. So
exactly.
you're not quite sure what you have watched
yes.
and whether or not that's real, but it was remembered, it was told through him. So exactly. it's like, that's different.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, fuck
exactly. it. Make right. better movies, people.
There's better movies yeah. out there. All right. Thank you, my G-Force.
Yeah, rad.
Lekker. See
nice.
You soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.